Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Jones! Bowden! He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. This is episode 281, believe it or not, and really glad you could all join us. Thank you so much for supporting this podcast over the last 3 years. We've really enjoyed bringing them to you and hope you've enjoyed listening to them. On this one, we have a left-arm spin special. On Thursday night in the virtual cricket club that Simon Mann and I have created in aid of the Cricketers Trust, the Professional Cricketers Trust, we had both the England's best left-arm spinner, Jack Leach, and also the best T20 left-arm spinner in the world in the women's game, Sophie Eccleston. They joined us together to talk about how they discovered spin, their careers generally, the last season or so. And also, they entered jointly our special quiz, How Well Do You Know Yourself? And actually, they did pretty well. So wait for the results of that later in the show. So that's coming up in a couple of minutes. Just a couple of things to mention first. One is that virtual cricket club. We really want more of you to join if you can. It's in aid of the Professional Cricketers Trust, that charity that supports cricketers who've fallen on hard times. We've got over 100 members now, but we want more members. So if you can join us, it's £6 a month. You get 4 live events, lots of blogs. I've also created a WhatsApp group as well, especially for that virtual cricket club, which we're calling the World's Best Cricket Club. So you can go to it by clicking on worldsbestcricketclub.com. We've got some great guests coming up as well. So that £6 a month really does buy you lots of great listening and watching experiences. If you can't join us at 7 o'clock on a Thursday night, you can watch the video on catch up afterwards. So it really is worth doing. And the people who we've had so far have had real fun, really enjoyed it, been able to ask direct questions to our guests like Joe Root and Mark Wood and Stuart Broad and so on. And we've had some real fun with it. So hope you can join us for that next Thursday night. We've got Alistair Cook on the show from 7 p.m. Just one other thing, and that is a thank you to Beer 52 for supporting this podcast as well. Actually, I've never been that much of a beer drinker, funnily enough, even though I was a bowler. I was more into, I don't know, gins, actually, in fact. But I've really got into beer in the last few months, and it's amazing. I've discovered, actually, that there are over 10,000 craft beer companies around the world. USA and UK are the leaders. Actually, the UK have got 3 more craft breweries than the USA. And Beer 52 really canvasses the world for the best craft beers and supplies those in nice batches of 8. So you can actually get a free batch of 8 beers all from around the world, from Korea, from Sweden, a little bit random. Some of them are really different in style and taste. Some of them have got sort of chocolate flavours and peanut flavours and some really interesting blends, actually. So you can get those free 8 beers from Beer 52 if you go to beer52.com/cricket, and you get those free 8 beers with just £5.95 paid for postage and packing and so on, and it'll be delivered straight to your door. Okay, so let's go into the interview we did on Thursday night with Sophie Eccleston and Jack Leach. And it was the first time, interestingly, that they'd ever been together on a show, which was a nice little exclusive for us. And we started asking both of them, how did they really get into spin in the first place?
I was quite a tomboy when I was younger. So on a Saturday, my dad would be playing cricket and my brother would be scoring. So my mum was like, you can come shopping with me, or you can go to the cricket with your dad and your brother. So I was like, I'm going to cricket. I'm not going shopping. So I think I just ended up going on a Saturday, and I spent like 8 or 9 hours at Cricket Club. And I just ended up starting playing, picking up a ball, picking up a bat with the boys in the nets. And yeah, it all started from there, really. Yeah, I was young, 5 or 6. So I used to play football and used to play cricket at the Cricket Club. And that's where my love for sport came from, really.
And how hard was it? Because my daughter played a lot with boys in different teams, and she actually enjoyed the boys' cricket at school actually more than the girls' cricket, because the ball bowling was a bit faster, and actually she just enjoyed the energy of the boys' cricket a bit more. What was it like for you?
Yeah, I think I found it hard at the start. I think when I was younger, I think when I was like under-11s, when it was Perth cricket, I think I started going, even football was the same. I started going to play games on a Sunday morning, and I'd turn up and they'd be like, oh, there's a girl playing. Like, she won't be very good. Like, it's only a girl. I hope I get her bowling at me. Or like little comments like that. And I think when I was younger, I think when I heard the first time, I think I cried a few times thinking, oh, why are they so horrible? But I think the boys at my cricket club were like brothers to me at the end, and they always stuck up for me. And I think they kind of knew that I wasn't just a girl that played cricket. I could actually play, and I'd been playing for a few years. So it was quite nice when I was older that I played with the boys team, and that's why I'm really close to them now. And they taught me all I know, really.
At what age did you just think, actually, I'm quite good at this? You know, you pick up a ball or a bat and you think, actually, you know, I can play this game.
I think it was when I was like 12 or 13. I think we had an overseas cricketer at our club, and his name was Nick. And I think I started playing the nets, just messing around, really. I never really knew that I was any good. I like the social life of playing cricket. I think it'd be with the girls, with the boys, having a bit of a laugh. And he was like, you're actually really good, Soph. Like, you should take it more seriously and go and try out for Cheshire or something. I was like, no, don't be so silly. Like, I just enjoy playing with my friends. But yeah, I'm really glad he said that, and I'm glad I went.
The other thing as well, about, you know, bowling left-arm spin. I mean, did you bowl left-arm spin when you were 12, 13? I mean, did someone teach you how to do it? Because it's not like, you know, if you run in and bowl fast, if someone just chucks you the ball, run in and bowl or whatever, you know how to bowl and you can sort of hurl it down. But there's a much greater degree of sophistication about bowling spin, isn't there? You have to learn how to grip the ball and what you're actually trying to do.
Yeah, I started bowling left-arm seam, and I just used to bowl as fast as I could when I was younger. Like, it could have gone anywhere. So I used to bowl seam, but then I think I bowled an overspin and overseam in an under-11s pairs game, and one of the guys at my club who played for Cheshire at the time, his name was Robin Fisher, he taught me everything I knew about left-arm spin, and basically why I'm a left-arm spinner now, he taught me how to bowl it and all the facts I know now.
What about you, Jack? Did you start as a seam bowler?
I think I've always bowled spin, really. I remember one net I went to club nets and I had like a really shiny ball and I was like swinging it and I was like, oh, and I got like 4 wickets in the nets and I was like saying to my dad on the way home, I was like, I think I'm going to bowl swing. Like, and he said, no, you're not, you're going to bowl spin. And I'm glad he said that, to be honest, because I definitely couldn't have bowled fast or anything like that. So yeah, it was obviously, but apart from that, it was all spin, yeah.
And did your father draw you into it? Because it seems that generally in English society, it's the male side of the family that draw the child into playing cricket, either an uncle or a father or a brother or something. What was it in your case?
My parents moved to Taunton just before I was born. And so then my dad did have a little bit of interest in cricket. He didn't play much or anything like that, but he wanted to go down to Taunton and watch Somerset. So from a very young age, I was there watching. He said he took me to my first game when I was 2 weeks old. I don't really remember that one. But apart from that, yeah, all my childhood was down watching Somerset and playing in the lunch break on the outfield and that kind of thing. And I guess that's where your love for it sort of starts.
Because I think that's why women's cricket is so important, is because at the moment we're only dealing with half the population, because it's the male line which tends to draw the sons and daughters into playing. But now, with more women playing and more women interested in the game, it might be more women that take their sons and daughters and, you know, nieces and nephews down to play. So
I think it's, I think we're at a kind of tipping point now where, you know, more women are going to start introducing their children to cricket. Sophie, what's been your impact, do you feel, on, you know, parents? Do you meet parents who say, oh, it's so great to have sort of a woman role model in a way?
Yeah, I've had a few parents come up to me and just say, it's great to have you as a role model here for the girls, because when I played for Rovanley, my club, I was the only girl at one stage, and that was me. I was the only girl in the whole of juniors that played cricket. And then slowly, like one, two, three, and now there's a own girls team and a women's team at my club. There's 40 plus girls and boys that play cricket at my club now. And I think to see that now and to think that was only me on my own when I was younger, it's obviously great. And I think the parents, so like, I think looking at watching us on TV now for role models for the girls, it's just great to get them into the sport.
At what age, we talked about, you know, development. What age, both of you actually, what age did you, when you were bowling left arm spin, did you pitch one and rip one past the outside edge of a right-hander's bat? Tuffles was talking about it last week, about that, the great feeling. The first time you do it, you think, wow, this is amazing. It's like, it's a magic trick almost.
Jack's done that a few times.
I was going to say, I'm still trying to do it. I was always a bowler that didn't spin it much, but it was very accurate to start with. That was kind of in kids cricket growing up, you know, if you bowled a good ball, they block it, like regardless of how much you were spinning it. So I felt like I probably developed a little bit later, like trying to spin the ball. And for me growing up, and something that I try and remind myself now, is like my favorite dismissal is getting someone out stumped. And like, you know, to do that, you have to get the ball up and down. And for me, when I did that in club cricket growing up, I was 15 and playing against these men who would think, oh, I'm going to try and whack you. They'd run down, hit you for six, and then the next ball you'd toss it up even more, and then they'd miss it. And I try and remind myself of that, because sometimes you can get a little bit defensive, a little bit like flat, and actually you still want to try and like beat them in the air. So that's something for me to remind myself, that actually I want to get people out stumped, as well as like beating the outside edge. But yeah.
Sophie, what about you and your sort of philosophy? Do you share that kind of attitude? Do you like trying to get people stumped as well?
Yeah, I think definitely stumped's a good one, because you know the ball's turning. I think for me, when I'm bowling, I just try and keep things simple. And if I overcomplicate things, then it starts to be a bit wrong. So I think try and turn the ball as much as you can. Try and get, like, try to try and rip the ball. And that's when I bowl my best. So I think for a spinner, if you turn it, and when you go to India, I think all the spinners love it. So when it's turning, you get someone stumped in India and it's ragging, you think, oh, this is great.
So what would you say to, I've often heard Graham Swann say, he said, if I were teaching youngsters how to bowl spin, he said, I'd teach them how to grip the ball, but then I would get them to rip it as much as they can from as young age as possible. You know, it's about spin. It's interesting, actually, hear you, Jack, say, for you, it was about accuracy. He said, I'd get them to spin it as much as they possibly could.
Yeah, and from my experience, I probably would do that as well. Getting people to spin the ball is the harder part. So if they're spinning it from a young age, then actually you can probably get that accuracy better. But playing the longer format of the game in England is like, you have to be accurate, because you know there's not so many like leg spinners playing in 4-day cricket. You know, they're probably more of a, they play more of a part in the shorter format. And I think that's just because of how seamer friendly, you know, some of the wickets are. And then actually when a spinner comes on, they need to be able to tie up an end. Otherwise, they're going to be off very quickly. So it's probably a product of the wickets that we play on in England, and actually doesn't allow for people, you know, 18, 19 year olds coming into the game to like rip it, but be a little bit inconsistent because they need to be able to tie up an end. So I hear what Swanee's saying, definitely, and I would agree with that. I mean, for me, trying to rip the ball, like, I have to be, like, you know, I went through a few things with my action where I actually had to be, like, if I think about ripping it, I'm worried about what my arm's going to do. So actually, like, I have to get my spin from my body, and actually that's just, and then completing my action actually just allows that spin to happen naturally. So that's something for me to think about as well. So, yeah.
actually fascinating that Sophie in particular started as a pace bowler. And of course, Phil Tufnell said that to us last week as well, that he started as a left arm swing bowler and then realised that maybe spin was the way to go. I agree with them, actually. I think fast bowling is a mugs game. Spin is much more fun. Of course, the boundaries need to be put back a bit for spinners, but generally nowadays with the big bats and the power that the batsmen have, but generally it's a much easier task than ploughing up and down into the wind, often trying to purvey it at 80 odd miles an hour and just getting smacked back over your head all the time. So I think spin is definitely the way to go. And look at the way the impact that spin has had, especially in T20. It's had a sort of resurgence, really, after being in the doldrums a bit, really, probably in the 90s. So, of course, Jack Leach is most famous for his incredible one not out in that amazing Headingley Test match of 2019, that extraordinary last wicket partnership with Ben Stokes. And so, of course, we got on to talking about that, and we first said, well, what was the plan when he first went in? What did Stokes say to Jack?
He's told me the plan is I face two balls or one ball of each over and he faces four or five, but at that point there's only four to win, so he's thinking I'm going to finish it this over. We didn't have that conversation, and so then I like start running at him, and then he doesn't go anywhere, and I absolutely.
So you must have thought there, you must have thought I'm history.
Yeah, I thought I'm gonna be hated forever. But you know, it all happens so quickly, and yeah, all so slowly at the same time. It's a weird feeling. And then obviously, once that's happened, the next ball Stokes. Is that LBW shout?
Should have been LBW, yeah. Well, I didn't think that was out, but Hawkeye said it was.
Yeah, and then I thought, oh, I'm going to have to face a hole over here. And I was shaking in between the overs. And then I just managed to knock one into a gap, and I like just ran as fast as I could because Stokes had called me through. And then I just knew I wouldn't have to face any more because Stokes was going to whack the next ball for four. And Cummins thankfully bowled a short wide one and he absolutely nailed it. And it was a good evening.
It was a good evening. So yeah, what was the evening exactly?
Ruti wanted us to go out on the wicket and just have a drink to sort of take it all in. And then he sort of, no, not him, but someone convinced me that I needed to do a sort of like repeat performance of like my single. So I did that, someone filmed it, and somehow it got out, and I was just mortified and I was so embarrassed. But luckily it went down okay. But
so you sort of did your little nerdle off the hip.
Yeah. And it was kind of reminded me of club cricket days where you kind of sit out on the boundary afterwards and have a drink. And yeah, Ruti wanted to go out and just sort of savour the moment and say that this is going to be one of the greatest test matches ever. So yeah, it was mad times, and then got a McDonald's drive through on the way home, so that's perfect.
McDonald's drive through that's god it's that's the lowest common denominator.
12 o'clock curfew, so that's what we had to do.
Was there any moment of that partnership that you actually enjoy, Jack? I mean, when it was happening, did you? I mean, the crowd noise on that Sunday at Headingley was unbelievable. But of course, you hadn't achieved anything, had you? You know, it was all very well, you know, Ben hitting the ball into the West Stand for six and playing those outrageous shots and the partnership building. But you actually, until you won the game, in a way, it didn't really matter, did it?
No, I mean, I didn't. No, I don't think you do enjoy any of it whilst it's going on. You just kind of. I did feel like the most focused I've ever felt on a cricket pitch. It was just like literally taking a ball at a time. I felt very clear about what my part in it was once Stokesy had told me. You know, to be honest, with 70 to win, I thought I'd have to play a bit more of a part than that. But obviously Stokes knew what he's capable of, and yeah, just big respect for him because I guess like for someone who I thought played off purely off instinct and, you know, was an amazing player, but actually the amount of the plan that he had and which bowlers he was going to target and which boundary he was going to target, you know, it's all very set out, and to see him pull that off and be part of that was very special.
So what did he say to you during what sorts of things did he say to you during the partnership then?
When I first went out there, he said, try and get through this over. So that was obviously how much he was backing me. But then, you know, I got through the over and he said, look, this is how it's going to work. I'm going to face four or five balls of every over, you know, be ready to run two. So we tried to, like, you know, there were big boundaries. So actually, you know, they put everyone out on the boundary and we were quite surprised about that, that there were those opportunities for twos as well. And then in between, it's just like, keep going, you know, just all the normal stuff that you say that means absolutely nothing. But just trying to stay very focused, I think, because it was very clear, like, the crowd was going absolutely mental and I'd never experienced anything like that. And even when we had sort of 60, 50, 40 to win, it was still like I think they were loving that we were underdogs and we probably weren't going to do it. You know, so we just wanted to stay focused. And as it gets closer, it gets harder. And, you know, suddenly there's nothing to lose. You feel like you can win it. So, yeah, that was kind of where it switched. And suddenly you're like, right, we've got to do this. And I remember seeing the security guys coming out onto the boundary when we needed like four or five to win. And I thought, oh, we've, like, they think we've done it. And then I was like, oh, no, like, we haven't done it. Like, until it's done, it's not done. So it's just trying to stay in the moment as much as possible in that circumstance, I think.
At what point did you think it was on, realistically on?
Well, Rooty said to me before I went in, he said, whilst there's two of you out there, it's not over. And I was like,
Did you believe that?
I just thought in my head, I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. But then obviously, like, I go out there, like, believing that I can, like, defend my wicket, and like I do believe that I can bat. And obviously I've seen what Stokes has done in the World Cup a couple of months beforehand. So yeah, I guess it's not about believing that you don't look at that end target, you just kind of break it right down and you're actually just taking a ball at a time. And that's what I loved about the whole experience, was actually how much I wasn't thinking about the end. I was thinking about the next ball in front of me and making sure I was as well prepared to face that ball. And then other than that, it was, that's how it went.
Here's a question from Ian Wigston. He says, Jack, given the choice between being on the honours board at Lord's or getting over the line at Headingley, which would you have preferred? Because, of course, earlier in that summer, you made 92 against Ireland in the one-off test match, and you were very close to getting on the honours board for your batting. So,
yeah.
Which would you have preferred?
That's such an easy question. I think I wouldn't change anything. Obviously, Headingley in the Ashes, like, and, you know, I am a team man. So for me, like, we won that Ireland game, which is perfect, and we won the Headingley game. So I wouldn't change anything, definitely not. But I am gutted that I was 8 runs short. So annoyed. Like, I wasn't annoyed at the time. I was like, I've got 92 at Lord's, like, this is the best thing ever. And then I was driving home a couple of days later and I was like, 8 more runs and you'd be on the board forever. Like, but it's just given me motivation to be there with the ball in the future. So yeah.
And what about you, Sophie? What's your career highlight so far?
I think I've had a few, but I think it'll be my test debut in Australia. I think my mum and dad were there. They were first time in Australia. And I think it was my first Ashes tour, first big tour away from home. And I made my Ashes debut. So I think it was quite a big thing for me. And to play my first Ashes was quite an experience, really.
Do you want to play more Test cricket? Because you've only played 2 Tests, haven't you?
Yeah, it's something I really look forward to. I think it's such a change. Like Red Bull cricket, get your whites on. I think it's something we'd all love to play more of. I think playing that one test match every 2 years is not enough. I think it'd be great to play some more, but I'm not sure. But in the future, I reckon it'll be a big thing for us.
In which form of the game do you think you're the most effective then? Long form red ball, ODIs, T20? I know you're world T20 number one bowler, but what do you think your game is most suited to?
Yeah, T20, definitely. I'm working on my ODI ball at the moment because I'm really bad because I get really impatient after bowling the same ball for a while. It's a big thing that I'm working on. I get a bit impatient and then I try and change something. So definitely T20 because I'm always in a battle. You're always in a battle when you come on. But in the ODI, I think I've got a bit of work to do.
Jeff says, Sophie, your batting seems to be improving. Do you aspire to push up the order?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a big thing for me now. I really want to be a batter and I think I'm starting to show what I'm capable of. I think I've been in the last few years, it's like, oh, put Soph down the order. She's still quite young, but I don't want to be classed as young anymore. I want to get up the order and be an all-rounder, really.
Right. Otherwise, it's boring. What about you, Jack? Get up the order?
Well, when I in the age group stuff, because I bowled a lot of overs, I was always just, you had the number 12 that could bowl. So I didn't actually bat at all.
Yeah, that was like me.
Really, yeah. So, like, I just didn't get much opportunity to bat in games. You know, I'd practice in the nets, but there's nothing like actually being out there. And so for a while, you know, you go out there and you just get out for naught 100%. I think it's taken a while to kind of sort of take my batting seriously, but also have other people take it seriously as well. And I enjoy batting, and I don't know about getting up the order. I feel like I know my place in the team is really depends on my bowling. So I want to keep working as hard as I can on my bowling and not put that, you know, put that second or anything, but I always keep working hard at my batting. I guess those kind of moments in the summer or last summer kind of give me that, what you can add to the team with the bat, wherever you bat. So it's important to keep working at it, definitely.
I mean, one point about the Headingley last wicket partnership is actually for Somerset, you'd been involved in some really nail biting finishes, hadn't you, in the championship in recent years. You sort of, it wasn't, in some ways, it wasn't a completely new experience.
Yeah, that's true, actually. We had one against Surrey where I came in with like 60 to win, I think, and managed to do that. And I had another one for club, which I say is right up there with Headingley for me. We won, we needed 70 off six overs or something, and I got like 14 not out. And the other guy got 70 not out. And honestly, I don't think I've ever enjoyed cricket as much as that day. It was the final at the county ground, and I was 15-year-old lad, and it doesn't get better than that. So yeah, that was right up there as well. So I've had that experience, I guess, as a tail ender. That's, you're there at the end of the game. So if things are getting tight, you will be involved in those kind of moments. You know, I think a lot of tail enders now actually think, oh, I try and hit runs as quickly as possible and play attackingly. Like, I think there's still room for like someone who can stay around with someone who's batting well in the top or middle order. So I guess it's about trying to fulfill different kind of roles within that lower order position.
I think you should name the person who made the 70 not out. I think he deserves his moment of fame. Can you remember who it was?
Yeah, Ali Warren.
Well done. Well done, Ali Warren. Fantastic.
Yeah. He was good. He was Ben Stokes of that day.
John Lister says, Sophie, how is women's cricket in India? And is it well supported? Any tips for Jack prior to his visit?
No, I think it's well supported in India. I think when I was away a couple of weeks ago, I was talking to the girls about cricket in India, and they've got really good upcoming youngsters, and some of them were in the squads, and I was thinking, oh, we need to get ready for them to come, because there's 16-year-olds that are looking really good. And I think to see that so good women's cricket, I mean, I'm not sure how I feel about an England girl going to India in 10 years' time and playing against their youngsters that are coming up now. But yeah, it's so well supported. I think the men's team's really good with the women's. I was talking to Smitty about it, and yeah, it seems really good for them.
Was it a bit of a shame that you only played 3 matches in that IPL female version?
Yeah, I genuinely loved it. Like, it's the girls are so nice, and the setup. I think the game just like they're really good. And I think there's supposed to be 4 teams this year, but because of COVID, I think that's been pushed back for a few years. But I'm hoping in a few years' time that we can have something that runs alongside the men's, because it's such a good tournament to be a part of.
Oh, do you sense that India in the women's game are going to go where India in the men's game have gone and are going, you know, being one of the dominant force? I mean, Australia are clearly the best side in the world at the moment. England sort of snapping at their heels, New Zealand a little bit. Do you think India, will the game expand there sufficiently for them to really be a powerful nation in a decade's time, or even sooner than that?
Yeah, I don't know about the men's. I think it might be different, but I think when we tour India on their home soil, it's a really hard series. I think it's one we look forward to, so it's going to be a challenge. But when they're on their home soil, they're one of the best teams and they're really hard to beat. But when they go away from home, they're not as good, but they're a bit more uncomfortable away from their home. So when they come to England, I think they just need to improve on going away from home, because in India the North are conditioned really well, but when they come to England pitches or Australian pitches where there's more bounce and a more pace, I just think they struggle a bit more.
Yeah, I suppose that's true with the men's team, actually. They've struggled in England in recent years, although they did win in Australia last time. It's going to be a fascinating series coming up in the next few weeks. And they're already preparing for the
Talking of Australia, there's Alex Gaywood says, Jack, a lot is said about how English-style spinners don't have a lot of success when playing in Australia. If selected for next year's Ashes, will you be looking to alter your style and approach significantly? Have you sort of studied, you know, the art of bowling spin in Australia, or have you done much of it?
I've been there a couple of times with club sides, and then we went there on a Lions tour as well, and found it very different, to be honest. And watching a lot of their, you know, guys from Australia bowl spin, and watching Nathan Lyon, is the amount of overspin they get on the ball. And I watched a Zoom kind of call between lots of spin coaches, and it was run by Nathan Lyon's coach. And, you know, he showed stats of Nathan Lyon averages 30 in Australia, 30 overall. Other people are, you know, subcontinent spinners, English spinners, you know, they're averaging in the 20s, but overall, but in Australia, it's a very different story. So for me, I think, looking at Nathan Lyon, how adaptable he is now to all conditions, it comes from that overspin that he gets on the ball. And that
tell us about overspin. I don't know if you've got a ball with you. You probably haven't, but how do you actually, what's the difference between overspin and side spin?
Well, for me, like, obviously I played on some wickets at Taunton that did spin. And I've found, like, sort of subcontinent style wickets, and on those wickets, I found that side spin really worked well, because one would, you know, one skids and can hit them on the pad, and one will really rag. Side spin, you're trying to get right over the top. So that would be the main difference. But I think actually it's more the amount that you have to work your body to feel like you can get over the top of that ball. It requires, you know, it requires to be athletic and fit and strong and have a strong action to do that. So that's something that I look at now a lot, is how much overspin I'm getting on the ball, because I genuinely think that that is the answer in those conditions. And I think obviously then you're getting that bounce, which is what can be lethal in Australia. You get drop as well. So whereas side spin obviously is going to either spin or go straight on, which is amazing, and probably comes out flatter as well. So in terms of, you don't have to beat people in the air as much in subcontinent, I feel like you can actually go into the wicket a little bit more and beat people off the pitch. So yeah, that's what I think anyway.
Here's a question from Leslie Mayo. It's a question for Sophie. Are reduced boundaries really necessary in women's cricket, given that the best batters can comfortably get the ball into the stands?
Yeah, I think a few years ago, maybe that was necessary. But I think now, with how the game's improving now, and especially with Australia, England, India, how all the teams hit the ball now, I've been watching some of the Big Bash, and some of the girls are easily hitting into stands at some of the grounds. So I think in a few years' time, hopefully, we'll get them back up, because as spinners and as bowlers, I would like more of a big boundary.
As big a boundary as possible.
It was an amazing day, that, wasn't it? And in a way, it's difficult to separate between that World Cup final and the Headingley Test match a couple of months later. I mean, just two extraordinary days, which you just, you know, you can't write that kind of stuff, can you? It's stranger than fiction, those sort of events. So amazing to be part of that. And I suppose, it, you know, it's interesting, actually, that Jack is sort of puts that on a higher pedestal, that one not out from 17 balls, than his 92 against Ireland, when he could have got on the honours board, but narrowly failed in the end. OK, so the last part of our virtual cricket club is this special quiz we do with all the players. How well do you know yourself? So far, Stuart Broad has proved he doesn't particularly. Joe Root a little bit better. Mark Wood and Phil Tufnell not bad. Now, how did Sophie and Jack get on? We put them together, so five questions each.
Right, the leader on the leaderboard at the moment, the leader in the clubhouse, is Mark Wood and Phil Tuffnell, tied on 7. So what we're going to do here is we're going to give you each 5 questions. And if you get it right, you get a...
He's got it!
And if you get it wrong, you get one of those, right? So the first question is to you, Jack. When you made 92 against Ireland at Lords, who dismissed you?
Tim Murta.
He's got it!
Easy one to start with. One out of one. Right, Sophie. Sophie, who was your first one-day international victim? ODI victim. I'll give you a clue.
We played.
She was a West Indian.
Oh, God, this is not good.
One-day international victim. West Indies.
Haley Matthews.
Yes. Well done. 1 out of 1 for you as well. So 2 out of 2. Okay, Jack, you're 1 not out at Headingley. How many balls did you face in the 10-wicket partnership of 76 with Ben Stokes?
17.
He's got it!
I'm sure people have told you that many times, actually. Well done. Well remembered.
Three out of three.
Sorry?
I watch it every day.
You watch it every day, do you?
No.
Right. Okay. 3 out of 3. Sophie, how many sixes have you hit in white ball internationals?
I don't think I've hit many.
Okay.
4.
4 is correct. Very good.
Yeah,
you're 4. You're doing well. You're storming ahead here. 4 out of 4. Right. Jack, how many first class wickets have you taken? And if you want me to give you a spread, I can. Do you know the exact number? You don't.
No, I think it's...
So is it 273, 293, or 313? 273, 293, or 313?
293.
Very good. Very good. 5 out of 5. You're going well. Right, same sort of question for you, Sophie, actually. How many international wickets have you taken?
A lot.
No, I don't think I'm actually on that many.
International wickets, so it's T20 and ODI together. No? Have a guess.
Is it 3 figures or less?
Less.
86.
I can't give you that. It's 99.
X options, and I don't get options.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think you would have got it if I'd given you. Sorry, if I'd have given you options. Anyway, so as well, it's only 1 down. You're still doing well. So you've got 5 out of 6.
Your next one, your next wicket is 100.
Yeah, your next wicket is your 100th. Well, 99. It's a combination of ODI and T20.
Yeah,
that's 99.
Okay.
Well, does that not include the test matches or not?
Actually, it probably does. Sorry, yeah, it probably does include test matches.
Yeah, that's in. 100.
So you've actually taken 6 in. Tests, 37 in presumably ODIs and 56 in T20, which adds up to 99. Okay, I can't give you a mark for that because you were so far away. 5 out of 6. Jack, which bowler has got you out most in Test cricket?
I've only played options.
No.
I've only played.
By the way, you're working together on this. It's not competitive, really. It's a it's a combined score, so you know. 5 seconds, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hazelwood.
No, that's wrong. It's Pereira of Sri Lanka 4 times. Okay. Right. Sophie, so you've now got 5 out of 7.
Come on.
Sophie, 8th question. You are number 1 in the world, T20 rankings. Who is number 2?
Oh.
Megan Schutt.
Yes, you got it. Very good.
Yeah.
6 out of 8. So if you get these 2 questions right, you go to the top of the leaderboard.
Right,
okay. Right. Yeah. So Jack, your question. Which English spinner has taken the most test wickets?
What currently?
No, in all time.
Derek Underwood.
Very good. I was interested to know how good your history knowledge was.
Yeah,
historical knowledge was. Very good. Do you know how many wickets he took?
280.
297, actually. That's not part of the question.
17 off.
Yeah, it was a good effort. Good effort. 297. And in fact, if he'd, if the world 11 against England, the rest of the world 11 against England had counted as a test match, he would have got 300, actually, but it wasn't counted. Right. So you're 7 out of 9. Now, is this question to go top of the leaderboard, right? For you, Sophie.
Come on.
What, according to your teammates, is your most irritating habit?
Oh,
and I'll give you a clue who it is. Danny Wyatt, correct? Oh, what did she say was your most irritating habit?
Gosh, I don't know. My nails, maybe?
Your nails! That's exactly what she said. What particular aspect of your nails?
What particular aspect?
You said your nails.
I'm always complaining about getting them done.
Actually, she said biting them.
Oh, I don't bite my nails.
Oh, well. Anyway, I mean, luckily, you said nails, and that is good enough to get the answer right. She also said talking about Everton endlessly.
She talks about Port Vale and Stoke all the time, and then she says she's a United fan on the side. I'm like, that's a joke. So she can't say anything. I'm going to speak to her after this.
Yeah, well, you should definitely do. Don't blame me though. I'm just the messenger. I'm just a question master. All right. Well, very good. You know, a round of applause for that, because you've got 8 out of 10. So you have shamed the England men into second place and third and fourth. Well done. I'll make sure you're written in gold lettering at the top of the leaderboard before next week. I'm just going to see if we've got any other questions. Jack, who is your spinning idol? Says Jacob Matthew.
Probably Graham Swan. Graham Swan. Watching him bowl.
Okay.
Or Sophie, obviously.
So Graham Swan. Yeah, okay. This is from Becky. How does the pressure of reaching personal milestones on the field affect you? This is for Sophie. Was thinking of Sophie getting her 50th ODI wicket in the final group match in the World Cup. So are you affected by, you know, personal milestones? Do you know about them?
No, I didn't have a clue. I didn't have a clue until someone brought a drink and I was like, oh, Soph, like, you need one more for 50th wicket. And I was like, do I? Are you sure? And Anya, who's the stato of the group, who knows everything, was like, yeah. I was looking at the door, and she's like, I found the line overnight. And then I got...
Oh, my God.
Like, yes. No, I didn't realise. I'm not very good with stats. I don't really know how... And I don't know how many games I've played for England now.
Question for Sophie and all of us here, actually. Are there any rules, and this is from Noughts again, are there any rules that stop Sophie playing with a male county side? If you have the skills, surely that's enough. What's the story there? I mean, I honestly think that you could play county cricket. I think you bowl just about fast enough.
I get so many comments saying, why don't you play men's cricket? So many.
And what's your view?
I mean, I'd love to. Like, I genuinely would love to. Like, it'd be so good. I'm not being an idiot, but I feel like I could hold my own. I feel like some of the girls could.
What do you think, Jack? I mean, not specifically about Sophie, but what do you think about a woman playing in county cricket?
I don't want Sophie to come to Somerset. That's all I know. But because I won't have a place. But
you could have two. Well, you could have two spinners. That Bunsen. You could. But you could both be operating. Yeah.
I don't know about the rules or anything, but I think that would be great. I don't see any reason why it shouldn't happen. I don't know whether it's possible or not.
The only thing I would think of is obviously like when the boys are bowl, if the boys would bowl at us, like we're not used to 90 miles an hour at our heads.
Mm.
Yeah.
But you could get used to it though. I mean, you know, it's just practice, isn't it? Yeah, I wasn't, but neither Jack or I are all that good at 90 mile an hour at our heads. We have to deal with it.
That's true. I don't like it at all.
Do you not at all?
No.
Do you think it's like really quick?
Yeah, definitely think it's quick, but you just have to try and, yeah, it's horrible. Like, kind of thing. Yeah, but obviously I bat down the order, so I'm not facing it all the time. So I feel like when you're in, you're just kind of trying to stay out there for as long as possible. But yeah, there's ways of definitely making it feel slower as well. I think if you get, like, once you get over the kind of anxiety, I guess, of like, oh, it's quick, and actually because to start with, your body wants to like move like before the ball's been released to try and like help you play it like better. But actually, that's the worst thing you can do. You need to just stay still and wait for it. And once I kind of worked that out, I found it a lot easier.
So you don't move when the ball gets bowled, really?
Well, I try to stay as still as possible. Like, obviously, I trigger, but then I try and stay still and then wait for them to release it and then move. Like, react. Like, make sure that I'm reacting to what's happening rather than trying to guess what's happening before it's happened. I guess that's, like, what I find. It's like if someone, like, went to, like, punch, like, in a boxing fight, if someone goes to punch, you know, you automatically, like, move out the way.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I found, but I got hit by Mornay Morkel like quite hard and got concussion, and it took me a long time to like work it out again because I felt like I just was so scared. So it does take time, and I think so like some people hate it, but I've managed to find a technique.
I did an experiment actually with a special camera which focuses on the eye looking at what you're looking at. And I did it with Nick Compton when he was still playing for England. And we basically faced the same bowler who was bowling about 80, 75, 80. And we looked at what our eye picked up. And the fact is, and this is a little bit of science here, your eye cannot adjust to a ball at 80 miles an hour and focus on it all the way down. So you have to pick points as it's coming down to focus on. And the better players almost have a sixth sense that the ball, which was released like this and down into the ground, is going to be somewhere here, and their whole body reacts to it slightly quicker. But it's there's a lot of premeditation and almost guesswork, and it's almost like training the brain in a way. And Nick Compton, needless to say, was ahead of the ball as it came down. I was slightly behind as it came down, but you can definitely train your body. And so, you know, some batsmen are obviously just better at picking up the ball than others, but you can definitely train yourself to improve anyway.
Definitely.
So there's hope for you, Sophie. You could be incredibly groundbreaking. You could be. I always thought actually Sarah Taylor might end up because a female fast bowler or seam bowler is probably never going to play first class men's cricket because you're just not quick enough. But a spinner or a wicket keeper, I reckon, definitely could.
No, I'd genuinely love to. That'd be so, like, genuinely love to. I mean, I just love to bowl the men in the nets. Like, when I'm playing at length, I don't, like, if they would, like, would you bowl a couple of overs? Like, I'd genuinely love to. Just see what it's like.
Sophie and Jack says, Terry, have you trained together?
No.
Okay. Would it be worth hiring England at full-time spin gurus to work with both of you?
We're still waiting to find out who is with us over the winter, but I think in county cricket as well, it's something that's not, obviously there's no sort of funding for a spin specialist coach. So quite often you're working with seam bowling coaches, which is, I don't mind that. I mean, you know, the basics of bowling is good to know from them, but I guess it's having that experience of someone who's been there and done it. And I guess as a spinner, you feel sometimes like you're the only spinner in the team. So it's like you're quite a individual thing, and so to have that coach to kind of sort of discuss ideas with, I think is a nice thing. But Sophie, do you have a spin coach?
Yeah, we've got Gareth Breeze. I don't know if you know him.
You play for Durham.
Yeah, he's been working with us quite a lot now, and all the spinners work well with him, so I think it's quite good to have him as a spin coach.
I mean, it's just talking about, I think Tuffers, who was on this last week, said, you know, talking with John Embry about spin, the art of spin, not necessarily the technique of it, but you know, John Embry was meticulous about how he set his field. You'd move a fielder 1 inch one way or the other, and you know, just little subtle changes of different batsmen, different styles of bowling, different field settings and things. It's such an art, really, that I think the more you can talk about it, probably the better in a way. So there you go, really intriguing 40 minutes or so of chatting to the two premier left-arm spinners in the English game. Poor old Jack's really had very little opportunity over the summer of 2020, but perhaps things will change in 2021. And Sophie, well, she's just going from strength to strength and looking incredibly good in the women's game. No one seems to be able to play her that confidently. And she did really well in that little tournament in the UAE featuring three Indian-based teams. Very interesting to see if she ever gets a chance to play in the men's game. It's well, you know, I think she could probably do pretty well in the men's game, but it will take quite a sort of change in perception and attitudes, and also probably rulings, to allow her to actually do that. It may never happen, but it would be an interesting experiment anyway. So that's it for this week. Don't forget, next Thursday night we have Alistair Cook in the Virtual Cricket Club, so you can join us by going to worldsbestcricketclub.com and follow the instructions there. As I say, £6 a month buys you a lot of value. There are also interesting memorabilia, signed memorabilia pictures to win as well. So trying to add lots of little features to that Thursday night experience. And our next podcast will actually be about probably the most famous cricketer in England, Mr. Ian Botham. We should call him Lord Botham now, of course. And actually, it's a special day on Tuesday, so we're going to have a beefy special podcast featuring him and some other people who know him pretty well. So look out for that on Tuesday evening. And don't forget to subscribe to the beer52.com/cricket site to get your 8 free craft beers. Hope you enjoy that. Hope you can join us for Tuesday and Thursday next week. Thanks for listening.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.